Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, just trying to wet my beak at the fire hose of Florida political news. And I'm joined, as always, by Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And from Tallahassee by the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy.
Hiya, George.
And right there, you've already reached your recommended weekly allowance of podcast knowledge and insight. But we're going above and beyond this week. We have a very special guest in the West Palm Beach studio, Palm Beach Post staff writer Kimberly Miller.
Hey, George.
All right. Well, new Governor Ron DeSantis continues to make his mark. Just since our last podcast, only a week ago, DeSantis has removed the school superintendent in Okaloosa County and the sheriff of Broward County. He has installed Broward's first black sheriff, appointed another conservative Supreme Court justice. We'll be talking a little bit about that today. Picked a fight with Airbnb, pardoned the Groveland Four. He proposed $2.5 billion in Everglades spending. He rescinded a controversial appointment by former Governor Rick Scott that Zach Anderson talked about on the last podcast. And he also asked for the resignations of the entire Scott-appointed South Florida Water Management District Board. And that's what Kim is here to talk about a little later. And by the time this podcast hits your ears later today, it's Thursday, January 17th, there's a chance DeSantis will have lifted the ban, the state's ban on smoking medical marijuana, or at least remove some of the roadblocks that were put in place by the Scott administration and the legislature. So it has been a busy week, and we got a lot to discuss. But first, I believe I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. There it is, yeah. That means it's time for our Pick a Number segment. That's the segment on the podcast where each of us puts forward a number, and then we explain what that number means in Florida politics. Zach Anderson, have you come prepared to participate with a number this week?
Yeah, George, my number is 33.
33 for Zach Anderson over in Sarasota. As always, we encourage listeners to take notes as long as you're not driving a car or operating heavy machinery. So you want to enter 33 next to Zach Anderson's name. John Kennedy, what's your number?
George, I've been going pretty low on numbers in recent weeks, but I'm going to increase my number allotment today with mine is 4,700.
Wow.
Wow. Kennedy. Uncharacteristic. 4,700 for John Kennedy in Tallahassee.
When you go low, I go high.
Yeah, right. George Bennett, that's me. My number is 53. And Kim Miller, our very special guest, you're new to the podcast. We're kind of putting you on the spot here, but do you have a number for the Pick a Number segment?
I'm going crazy. Eight.
Eight. Snowman for Kim Miller. So just to review, we'll go lowest to highest here. Our very special guest, Kimberly Miller, known as Kim Miller to those of us that work with her. She has got a number 8. Zach Anderson with a 33. George Bennett, that's me, 53. And John Kennedy off the res with a 4,700. You want to savor those numbers, hang on to them, and then later in the podcast we'll explain what they mean in Florida politics. But let's get to our loaded lineup. There's so much to talk about, but we want to focus on one very important issue, and that's why we have Kim Miller here. You know, during the campaign and the transition and in his inaugural address we noted last week, Ron DeSantis has said that fighting red tide and blue-green algae and other water woes would be a top priority for his administration. And one arena where that will play out is the South Florida Water Management District, which has a 9-member board. All the board members were appointed by Governor Rick Scott, and they've been perceived by some critics, most notably by Congressman Brian Mast, who's a key advisor to the governor on environmental issues. They've been perceived as being too pro-agriculture. Well, Governor DeSantis wants to make some changes on the board that Kimberly Miller is going to tell us about. So first of all, Kim, as is our custom on the podcast with all our guests, we welcome them with our royalty-free surf music. And Kim Miller is a surfer as well, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. This is the second surfer guest that we've had on here, so that music is appropriate. Explain to us, just first of all, basically, you know, a reasonably informed and engaged citizen might not be able to name a single member of the South Florida Water Management District Board, but tell us, what does the board do and what does the district do?
You know, it's one of the most important boards in the state of Florida. They're in charge of water, and that means implementing projects to restore the Everglades. That means making sure that the water is clean and distributing the water. So where the water goes, who gets the water, how much they get, and the water quality.
Very important. And so Ron DeSantis, what's his general criticism been of the board in the past?
Well, I think the big concern came to a head in November, just after the election. It was 2 days after the election, and the district was down in Miami doing a vote on extending some leases, or at least a single lease, to Florida Crystals, which is farming in some land south of Lake Okeechobee that's slated for a reservoir.
Now, when you say they were doing a vote on this, it was kind of on short notice, wasn't
it? Yes, right. So it wasn't put on the agenda until about 9 p.m. the night before the meeting, which was in Coral Gables. It took me 3 hours to get down there. So a lot of people weren't planning on attending. I don't know if 3 hours is normal or not, but I'm thinking it's kind of normal. So it did. And Representative Mast came down after a flurry of tweets and emails went out when the leases hit the agenda late that night, like the night before the meeting. And he asked the board to delay the vote since we have a new governor, and the board said no. And so they approved the leases it was eight approvals, and one person declined because his law firm does business with the sugar industry. So,
okay. And and these leases dealt with what land is it, and what's the significance of it?
It's 16,000 acres that's being used right now to farm sugarcane. It's south of Lake Okeechobee. It's going to be slated for a reservoir to hold Lake Okeechobee water. And the hope is that that will reduce the discharges into the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie estuaries, which see the blue-green algae.
Right. So this reservoir has been talked about a lot as a key element of alleviating these discharges. And here the board, today in a short notice, shortly after DeSantis gets elected, votes to extend leases to continue sugarcane farming there. Now, I've heard conflicting things. Does that affect the ultimate timetable for completing this reservoir?
The district says absolutely not. They said it was going to, they can cancel the lease in 2 years. That's an option that's in the lease. They said it would take them that long to get the permits for construction to start. So in the law, in the implementing bill of this law, the district says it mandates that they keep that area farmland so that it doesn't just go fallow and sit unused. Mm-hmm. So they claim they were just doing what they were required to do by law, and that the lease did not need to be advertised because it's in law and they had to vote for it. So it was almost just a rubber stamp. And they played videos of senators speaking on the floor that they say backed up their vote.
So whatever the merits of that decision to hastily put that on the agenda, it's certainly Brian Mast was and Governor-elect at the time DeSantis were not pleased with it and wanted them to delay. And they said, no, we're not going to delay.
They said no. And for weather reason, they said El Nino, which was forecast and still is actually forecast to start this winter, would pour rain on us. And so the one little thing, they did reserve 500 acres to start putting rocks on, to basically is kind of groundbreaking for the construction of the reservoir. They needed to start doing that before it started raining.
Right.
That was their reason to say, we can't delay it. We have to vote on this and get it moving because it's going to start raining. It has not started raining yet down here.
Right.
But that's what the forecast was at in November.
And when we talk about weather forecasting, you're not just some, you know, most reporters, most of us don't really know what we're talking about, but you actually have a degree in weather forecasting. Tell us about that.
No, I have a certificate.
Certificate.
In weather forecasting from Penn State. Now, I know they say certificate, but hey, I went to school for a year and a half.
Yes.
To get that certificate, and it was not easy. There was
no,
a lot.
I absolutely not. I mean, you're credentialed. So when you talk about a weather forecast, it's not just like me or some guy talking about the weather forecast. You know what you're talking about. But okay, but getting back to the South Florida Water Management District Board. So recently, Governor DeSantis, now governor, last week in Stewart, you were there. He wants all the board members to resign.
Yeah, it was really interesting day because the board was meeting in West Palm Beach, their regularly scheduled meeting. And we had knew the night before that the governor was going to be in Fort Myers to make a major announcement about water. That morning, then we heard, and I was figuring it was going to be red tide related. Then that morning we heard he was going to Sarasota and then Stewart. And the TC Palm had broken a story the day before saying that he was going to make an announcement on appointing someone to replace one of the board members who had resigned January 1st to pay more attention to her businesses. So that's kind of what the district thought, but no one knew at the district, which they were saying was kind of unusual for a governor to go make a big water announcement and not tell anyone at the largest water management district in the state that covers those areas. So when we found out he was going to be in Stewart, I went up there and one of the board members went up there thinking he was going to hear what the new appointee, who the new appointee was going to be. Instead, he heard he was being asked to resign and he was a little bit flabbergasted. He said he wasn't surprised and that, hey, he wasn't going to resign and he hasn't resigned. Two board members have resigned after DeSantis made the request, but three have not and three have their terms up in March anyway. So
at least two of them have specifically told you in a story that you had this week that they do not plan to resign.
Right. Correct. Yes.
And they're appointed to terms. I mean, the governor, they don't serve at the pleasure of the governor. So they can serve out their terms, I guess. But what can happen next?
Well, from what I understand, there's actually three that have said they're not going to resign. But one of them, you know, a couple of them, again, they're up in March. So it's not that big of a deal. But from what I understand, they can only be removed for cause by the Senate. So that would be something that would have to come up before the Senate.
Okay. And the larger importance of this, though, is at some point, certainly by March, just because of some vacancies that are there already, and then if these two people do resign that said they would, within a few months, Governor DeSantis is going to have a majority of his people on this board. And what does that mean in terms of all these water issues that we've been talking about?
Well, he'll be able to, you know, technically he can appoint them, but they're supposed to be independent. Now, I hear, you know, in the background that under Governor Scott, nothing happened without Tallahassee's approval. So if he has their ear, he could, you know, he'll be able to direct, at least in the background, influence votes on, and, you know, that could impact the agricultural interests south of the lake. And I think they are concerned about it.
The agricultural interests.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So let's keep that in mind, this, you know, personnel kind of stuff of people that most people probably haven't heard of, but does have big implications on water supply issues and other stuff going forward. And then Zach Anderson, you, last week were at, saw the governor on another leg of his, tour where he was making some environmental announcements over in your neck of the woods. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think we have a clip first that we can play of DeSantis discussing his new executive order on the environment. He came to Moat Marine Laboratory, which is a big research center in Sarasota, to make this announcement. Here's what he said.
I wanted us to be on more of a war footing on this and be have a sense of urgency. And so I think that's what today's executive actions really show. You know, shows a vision, but it also puts meat on the bones.
War footing. Okay.
And a lot of people would say that the state needs to be on a war footing when it comes to pollution. I mean, it's hard to overstate how devastating the pollution problems have been in Florida over the last year when you have blue-green algae flooding into the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers. You know, really hurting tourism in those areas. Red tide expanding across the whole state over the last year. Here in Southwest Florida, it was awful. We just had a story about the number of sea turtles that were killed, killed manatees, massive fish kills all over the place. And it went all the way over to the east coast of Florida, where you guys are, and up in the panhandle by John. So, I mean, it was really a major issue, and DeSantis promised to take action. And so right out of the gate, he did this executive order where he did a number of things in this executive order. One of them was he created the Office of Environmental Accountability and Transparency. He created a new chief science officer within the Department of Environmental Protection. He established a blue-green algae task force. And he also went beyond just algae issues, and he established an Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection aimed at addressing sea level rise. And he directed the state agencies to request $2.5 billion over 4 years for Everglades restoration and to protect water resources, which would be a billion more than was spent on those issues over the last 4 years. So, you know, he said this is a very aggressive move. Obviously, he described it as being on a war footing. And he really got a lot of bipartisan praise for this executive order. You know, even, people who have been critical of the legislature on environmental issues were saying that this was a good step, although some people say that, you know, it didn't go far enough, or, you know, that they would really like to see him follow up. You know, the Sierra Club put out a press release that said they had some major concerns with these with the executive order, and said that there was no commitment to addressing agricultural pollution. He didn't actually say the words climate change, even though he established this Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection to address sea level rise. And he didn't do anything to address what they noted as a lack of statewide land use planning. You know, land use planning is viewed as a big problem when you have all this development and runoff, carrying fertilizer, lawn fertilizer, other things. A lot of people would like to see the state go back to having a statewide growth management law to try and coordinate some of that and mitigate some of the impacts there. So he was pretty widely praised, but a lot of people said they would like to see him go a lot further, and we'll see what happens in this legislative session.
Yeah, and speaking of legislative session, our man in Tallahassee, John Kennedy, give us your perspective on how some of this water stuff is going to fare in the legislature.
Well, you know, the kind of tension that Kim and Zach are talking about, is that's playing out in the legislature, too, with some of the governor's own party now, you know, talking about pushing back against him, or, you know, somehow when it comes to addressing this water problem. It really comes down to, a lot of it is how to distribute blame, you know, and the cost of cleanup. The sugar and the agriculture industries have plenty of defenders in the state legislature. DeSantis, you know, he's at this point, it's early, but he's kind of taken the high road, I guess. He's saying, just last week, he said, quote, "I just think there's a huge majority of folks in Florida who support making sure we get this right. And I think the legislators are going to listen," he says. But he also talked about how, you know, he has rock-ribbed Republican areas, as he described it, like Southwest Florida, that really want something done. But the sugar industry has been pointing fingers at the role septic tanks play in fouling the water, and they've drummed up some science that moves blame away from the farming industry, and that's getting some support from Republicans in the legislature. So I think, you know, while DeSantis is ready to say that all polluters seem to share in this responsibility, and when it comes to cleanup, the legislature is going to find science that defends the idea of making taxpayers carry the bulk of the cleanup, you know, either through pouring more state tax dollars into the fight, or making septic tank owners pay more for inspections and conversion to sewage. Or another idea that's kicking around, and this is wildly controversial and condemned by environmentalists, but the idea of trying to use the voter-approved Amendment 1 land-buying dollars to help people pay for sewage hookups. So, all these things are being kicked around right now by members in his own party. And this is something, it looks like DeSantis is going to have a fight on his hands.
All right. And you will want to stay tuned for more on that. Now, Kim Miller, what's your thought on all that as a water expert?
No, I agree. There's going to be a fight, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, as far as the agricultural interests go, a lot of the environmentalists should are focused north of the lake at this point. That, you know, there is clean water going into the Everglades agricultural area, or out of the Everglades agricultural area, that, you know, those sugar farmers have been are being regulated. So what's going into Lake Okeechobee is highly polluted, highly, highly polluted. And that's what's going out the estuary. So now we have this reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee. Maybe we need to turn our, you know, eyes to what's going on north of the lake.
All right. Throwing down some water knowledge there. Well, we will want to stay tuned to that. Well, another recurring issue. Last week we mentioned Governor DeSantis appointing a conservative judge to the Florida Supreme Court. He's going to have he came into office with three vacancies to fill. He filled one last week. We talked about Barbara Lagoa. And this week he added a second conservative judge to the court, Robert Luck. He's an appellate judge from Miami-Dade, from the same appeals court as Barbara Lagoa. He has a reputation as a brilliant writer, and he's only 39 years old, so he could be on the court for decades to come. I want to play a clip from DeSantis in his inaugural address with his thought on the role of the judiciary. Can you cue that up for us, please, Thomas Cordy?
I will only appoint judges who understand that the proper role of the courts is to apply the Constitution as written, not to legislate from the bench. The Constitution, not the judiciary, is supreme.
Okay. Constitution is supreme. Well, here is what Robert Luck said at his announcement with Governor DeSantis by his side a couple days ago.
During his inaugural address, the governor said he would appoint judges who, quote, who understand the proper role of the courts is to apply the law and Constitution as written, not to legislate from the bench. The Constitution, not the judiciary, is supreme. This morning, Governor, with you standing by my side, I have taken an oath to make the Constitution and not the judiciary supreme. I have sworn to God to support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and the state of Florida. And I swear to you, Governor, that I will keep that oath today, tomorrow, and God willing for the next 35 years.
So, and DeSantis still has one more pick to come, and likely, as he promised throughout the campaign and in his speech, it's going to be a conservative judge. And we're already seeing Republican lawmakers act in anticipation of having a more conservative court than Florida's had for the last 20 years. Our reporter, Christine Stapleton, who's been a guest on the podcast before, has a story in Gatehouse outlets across the state about a fetal heartbeat bill that would put some restrictions on abortion. It's the kind of bill that has been struck down by courts in some other states and that probably wouldn't have had a chance in Florida with the court that was in place before now. It's an example of legislators believing that they can pass more conservative legislation on the abortion issue than they have in the past. And then and Zach Anderson, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more about that as the legislative session comes around. But Zach Anderson, also, though, you had a conversation with Senate President Bill Galvano related to the courts and some other legislation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, George, under the previous configuration of the Supreme Court, you had what was kind of a liberal-leaning majority that struck down a number of things that were passed by the GOP legislature and GOP governors over the last 20 years. So remaking the court, a lot of Republicans are hoping that now they can advance some things that maybe had been struck down in the past. And one of the biggest issues that they've confronted is pushing school choice and some education reforms. Jeb Bush, when he was elected in 1998, really promised a lot of education reforms, and he pledged to enact vouchers, and he did enact vouchers that would allow students to attend private schools, but that got hung up in the courts, and eventually the Supreme Court invalidated Jeb Bush's vouchers in 2006. And I was talking to Bill Galvano, the Senate president. He gave a speech to a group in Sarasota this week, and he explicitly said, you know, we have a new court. And his quote was that right after that, he said, you'll probably see some more bold steps in education and revisiting some of the ideas that Governor Bush brought to the table back in the day. And he specifically mentioned to me after that meeting that there's been talk about education savings accounts, which is basically the state putting a bunch of money into a savings account and parents and students being able to use that money to do whatever they want with it. Not whatever they want, but to not just to go to a public school, but to a private school or to do tutoring or, you know, maybe even go to community college or pay for other educational services, which is basically, you know, basically like a universal voucher. So, you know, he's explicitly saying, hey, we've got a new court. We're going to revisit some of these ideas that, you know, Jeb Bush and others brought to the table back in the day that were overturned by the previous court. You know, it seems like they're kind of chomping at the bit to kind of get in there and see what the new court will allow.
Yeah, and this is something that John Kennedy mentioned just last week on the podcast on education and some other issues. So, John, what are you expecting to see?
Well, yeah, DeSantis had a busy opening couple of weeks already, you know, basically doing a lot on his political to-do list. You know, we've talked about some of the things. And remember, too, he's done all this without a private plane, like Rick Scott used to use. You know, in fact, DeSantis he's been using a refitted King Air that the FDLE confiscated and was once used by drug traffickers. And that resulted in an emergency landing last week in St. Petersburg. That's kind of revived talk within the legislature about trying to get some reliable state aircraft that back in the Scott era was all sold off. What's next for DeSantis? So, you know, I think we may be hearing more on healthcare changes. Zach pointed out education to come. Another idea may be looking at trying to expand the state's tax credit scholarship program, which he promised on the campaign trail. We also are likely to hear something from DeSantis on Florida joining the E-Verify federal system that checks the legal status of new hires in the state. That's there already is legislation that would do that, but it's already drawing a firestorm of opposition from those who rely on cheap labor, and that's mostly the agriculture and the tourist industry to a great extent. But for the Republican voting base, these immigration issues are really important. And for DeSantis, I think you know, the idea of making employers screen applicants through E-Verify and enacting a ban on the state having any sanctuary cities, that's you know, places where federal immigration laws are only loosely enforced. Those look like something that are going to be on the near horizon for DeSantis. But it's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, so far DeSantis has gotten a little bit of praise from, you know, Democrats on his environmental and some of his personnel moves. But I think that's likely to soon change, especially when he starts openly embracing vouchers and immigration crackdowns.
There you go. Well, yeah, it has been already a very busy pace. And Matt Gaetz, a congressman from the Panhandle, who's a close advisor to DeSantis, remarked he's been advising him. You know, early in the administration, there's a kind of a strategy to rolling out all this stuff while you've got the most political capital. And Matt Gaetz addressed a little bit of that clip that Zach Anderson got. Can you cue that up for us, Thomas Cordy?
Rural enforcement, pardoned Sheriff Israel's been removed, the South Florida Water Management District has been called to resign, and the strongest water quality executive order in Florida history has been executed. Congratulations. That's just week one. Wait till you guys see what they are planning for next week. I was a lieutenant governor, and we were working and strategizing and building out this 100-day plan for the beginning of the DeSantis administration. And we, you know, came in and presented it to the governor, and he said, I love it. Let's do it all in January. So we've had to remind him, you will still be governor in February.
So a busy January, and I've heard that from other DeSantis advisors that you know, he's going to be rolling out a lot of stuff this month. So that means you want to follow our Gatehouse media outlets and of course, the Inside Florida Politics podcast. But I think right now, I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music again. Well, there it is. Yeah. Okay. That means it's time to return to our pick a number segment. Kim Miller is enjoying that music. Let's go lowest to highest. We'll start with Kim. She had the number 8. Can you tell us what that number 8 means?
8 years is the time on the lease for the sugarcane field in south of Lake Okeechobee, but they can cancel it in 2 years.
And that's where that reservoir is going to go?
Yes.
Okay, very topical. All right, Kim Miller, 8. Very good. Zach Anderson, you had the number 33. What does that one mean?
So, George, we've talked about how DeSantis has been off to a fast start. And one of the things you mentioned in your intro is that he's got an announcement planned today, shortly after we record this podcast, about medical marijuana. And a lot of people are wondering if he will revoke the state's ban on smoking medical marijuana. That ban has been challenged in court and the state is appealing it. And some people are wondering if he might drop the appeal. One of the plaintiffs in that case, trying to get the state to drop its smoking marijuana ban, is Kathy Jordan, who's from over in this area. She's a Manatee County resident. And 33 years ago, she was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And shortly after that, she started smoking marijuana, illegally, obviously. Her husband actually grew it in their yard in Parrish. In 1998, she founded the Cannabis Action Network, served as its first president, and she was lobbying the legislature for decades to try and get medical marijuana legal long, long before voters finally adopted it in 2016. So she's somebody who's going to be watching closely to see what Ron DeSantis announces today.
Strong take there. Okay. My number was 53. 53, as we record this podcast, we are on day 53 of that President Donald Trump has not played golf, 53 straight days. And that's the longest golf drought of his presidency. You may remember back in November, I remarked that he had gone 38 days without playing golf before he came to Mar-a-Lago over Thanksgiving weekend and then played golf for 5 days straight. And ordinarily, December and January, this would be prime golf playing season for the president while he's down in Florida. But alas, because of the government shutdown, he has not been to Mar-a-Lago since Thanksgiving, and it has taken its toll on his golf game. So while federal employees are going without, some federal employees are going without paychecks, the president is also going without golf for a while. And then now our last number, our way off the chart, big, huge number from John Kennedy, 4,700. Tell us about that number, John.
Yeah, George, it's hard to follow a golf shutdown, but 4,700 is the number of students that Bay County officials say are going to leave their system in the coming months in the wake of devastating Hurricane Michael. Now, Bay County, which is the home of Panama City, isn't that big. It's under 28,000 students. So we're talking about a loss of about 17% of the school population. Schools are also trying to make up, what's forecast to be about a $300 million worth of repairs, and they only have about $100 million worth of insurance. These numbers come from Gatehouse's own Panama City News Herald, which has done yeoman's work covering Michael and its aftermath, even as its own building was heavily damaged from the storm. But this is a similar story across many of Florida's 11 counties that were part of the Michael disaster declaration. You're seeing these shifting demographics where it shows, I think this is going to become a trend in Florida's eastern panhandle. People are leaving, jobs have disappeared, and they may not come back. So we talked in an earlier podcast about how state economists have said that they don't expect to get what's usually an increase in state sales tax dollars caused by hurricane rebuilding. It kind of boils down to Michael caused damage in a part of the state where a lot of homes were uninsured, not very expensive, and may never be rebuilt. DeSantis has made 2 trips out to the panhandle in his short time as governor. And just this week, he was with FEMA Administrator Brock Long. It looks like the governor knows that the panhandle needs attention and that this could be a drag on the state's overall economy. And he's trying to get things back, or at least trying to look better for the summer tourist season, which is coming soon.
All right, John Kennedy goes big with 4,700, another strong number. And that wraps up another of our Inside Florida Politics podcasts. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. It has been my honor to be your host, and I've been joined here in the studio for this podcast by our very special guest, Kimberly Miller, my colleague at the Palm Beach Post.
Thank you so much.
And we've been aided here in West Palm Beach by Corzano. That's the team of Thomas Cordy and Joe Forzano. We've also been joined from Sarasota by Zach Anderson, the politics editor for the Sarasota Herald Tribune, and from Tallahassee by our Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief, John Kennedy. And finally, from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the man who makes it all happen, our digital audio director for Gatehouse, Adam Fish. Thank you.